Here we have Ben and Eliza and Hayden and Ji-hun and reasonably new parents. And I thought, as the father of 3 and 11, 9 and 7, I might begin this talk this morning with a little bit of parenting advice for a little bit of kind of casting the future for you, Ji-hun, Hayden, for you, Ben and Eliza. And they'll gradually learn to talk. That's really, and first words will come out, mum, dad, kind of bear, draw, up, down, and then their first fully formed sentence. And you can look forward to this, and we've had 3 kids now, and it was exactly the same sentence with all of our children. It's not fair. And that's how it'll play out with Olivia and Emily, and that's my prediction for you this morning. And it's just fascinating. You see this as adults, and we look at children, and they're just like us, only they're not quite as subtle. And I was reading this. That's how we feel, isn't it? We look at what other people have got, what the situation they're in, and we say to ourselves, a little bit more subtly than that, it's not fair. I want to introduce you to an American family I read about in Time magazine who typify this. Charles Koch is the 9th richest man in America, and he and his brother, they're the Koch brothers of New York, Palm Beach and Monte Carlo. They possess one of the greatest private fortunes in America, and they've been caught up for 20 years in an awfully bitter game of it's not fair. At stake is billions of dollars. Koch Industries is a $25 billion oil, chemical, energy company, a company built by their father. Mr. Koch revolutionized the industry, made a fortune, crossed his fingers that his sons would wisely manage their inheritance, and then died of a heart attack. And then the brothers have been participating, really, since the death of their father, in probably the nastiest corporate family feud in American business history. That's a big call. The nastiest family corporate feud in American business history. And the scheming and the backstabbing in this family is phenomenal. Bill tells of a homosexual blackmail attempt by Charles in an attempt to get stock at a cheap price. Bill believes that in 1983, Charles tricked him into selling his shares for only $470 million, half a billion dollars less than they were worth. Bill says Charles is a cheat. Charles says he's not a cheat. Charles says, I'm reluctant to attack my brother Bill publicly, but Bill is greedy, lazy, incompetent, neurotic and vindictive. Bill says, it's not fair. Charles says, it's not fair. Now, just open up to that handout sheet, the part of the Bible that was... Just do this with me. Grab the part of the Bible that was read to us a moment ago. It'd be very helpful for you. And it's taken from Luke's account of Jesus' life. I'm in Luke chapter 12, sentence 13, the top sentence on the handout sheet, and someone said to Jesus, teacher. Now, the person in the crowd sees Jesus, sees him as teacher, rabbi. And that's right, Jesus was a teacher, a respected Jewish rabbi, and it was often the practice of a rabbi or a teacher. Somebody would bring an issue. We're unsure about this. We've got a dispute about this. And they would settle the issue. Things like inheritance, things like they're covered in the Old Testament books of the law. But Jesus is actually much more significant than a Jewish rabbi. Already, if you're reading through Luke's account of Jesus' life in the first 11 chapters, there's been talk of Jesus sending out an unclean spirit. There's been talk of Jesus healing people. There's been talk of Jesus speaking of this kingdom of God. He's cleansed a leper. He's healed a paralytic. He's given the most amazing address ever in the Sermon on the Mount. And some people are just starting to figure out what we now know, that this is the Son of God, God's King, God's ruler on the planet. So this bloke brings a question to God's King. And look with me in the sentence 13, the top one on the page there. Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Teacher, it's not fair. I'm missing out. And you can hear Bill Koch saying it to Jesus about Charlie Koch, can't you? Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. It's not fair, Jesus. Come on, give me an even break. But this is not just the request of Bill Koch about Charlie Koch. And it's not just the request of Emily and Olivia, of my kids, of our kids. I can hear me saying, it's not fair. And I think if you're honest with yourself, you'll be able to hear times when you've said, it's not fair. And so this bloke comes to Jesus in 13, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. And just look how Jesus replies in 14. Jesus replied, man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between us? He's saying, I'm not here to solve the it's not fair fights in your family. Now, it's not that Jesus doesn't have the authority to do that, the authority to solve this family dispute. Of course he does. He's the Son of God. He's the Lord of Lords. He's the King of Kings. But rather than deal with the symptom, it's not fair, Dr. Jesus says, let me deal with the disease. I'm going to do preventative medicine. And I've made the charge, perhaps provocatively, but I've made the charge that you and I have an it's not fair problem. And so I think whatever diagnosis Jesus gives to this man is probably going to be helpful for us as well. So I think we have the same disease, and we need to hear Dr. Jesus's prescription for this disease. And really, it's a very simple diagnosis from Jesus, but as I've thought about this, it has cut me to the heart. And I suspect it'll cut you. Very simply, Jesus says something about who is the fool and who is the wise one. And he makes 3 points about the foolish way to live and 3 points about the wise way to live. And so the first one, number one, fool. Jesus says it is foolish to live greedily for material assets as your main driving priority in life. So he says, 15, then he said to them, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And I mean, that's a warning that the crowd back there needed to hear, and it's a warning that Bill and Charlie Kosh needed to hear, but it's a warning that I need to hear. Because so many of us here in the inner world, we live for possessions. Many of us, our focus is on greed and acquiring more and acquiring wealth. It's what drives us. It's what keeps us going. And in this story that Jesus tells, all this man's time and effort and energy is poured into accumulating more and more and more and more. And how much is enough? And how much do you need? And the bloke in the story is busy building his barns, and the answer comes back, just a little bit more than I've got. And Jesus says, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist of the abundance of his possessions. Jesus is saying, living life like the Koshes, with money as your base motivation in life, is profoundly foolish. Beautiful woman, a few years ago, Raquel Welsh. She said in an interview, I'd acquired everything I wanted, and yet I was totally miserable. I thought it was very peculiar that I'd acquired everything I'd wanted as a child. I had wealth, I had fame, I had accomplishment in my career, I had beautiful children and a lifestyle that seemed terrific, and yet I was totally, miserably unhappy. I found it frightening that one could acquire all these things and still be so miserable. It's foolish to be living for money. Or 60 Minutes interviewed Boris Becker about his suicide attempt. Becker said, I'd won at Wimbledon. I had everything, but I had a hole in my life that nothing could fill, and I felt like a puppet on a string. I mean, Raquel Welsh, Boris Becker, they're living everyone's dreams. They could buy anything, they could buy anyone, and yet they are desperately unhappy. Or Bill and Charlie Kosh, they could buy Raquel Welsh or buy Boris Becker, and they are desperately unhappy. Friend, if you think the most important thing is the most number of assets that you can accumulate, then you are a fool. But you know, I can see the fool in me. I mean, I suspect you can see it in you. I don't want to be Rupert Murdoch. But this is niggly, naggly little thing. And I remember it a couple of years ago, this niggly, naggly. All my life's problems would get sorted out if I could just get one of those push-button garage door openers. And then I got one. And I'm still not happy. And then I thought, you know what would solve everything? I went to my mother-in-law's place, and in her bathroom she had one of those lamps that come down from the ceiling and are just warm. And I thought that would solve all my problems. And I was preaching this down at a church in Miranda, how it would just solve everything for me if I could get one of those lamps in the bathroom. And this lovely little old lady bought me one. And we had it installed. But I still want more. I need an air conditioner for my study. I just put that out there today, just in case. I can see that I'm the bloke in the story too. How much is enough for me? Just one more barn. Just one more bathroom light. Just one more air conditioner. I don't think I'm Robinson Crusoe in this room. This whole attitude, longing, it was Rene Rivkin who said it, he who dies with the most toys wins. What a foolish statement. Isn't that a tragic statement? Boris Becker will say to the fool, it does not work. Raquel Welsh will say to the fool, it does not work. And the Lord Jesus says to the fool, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Second point on the fool. Jesus says it is foolish to ignore God. Listen to Jesus. He tells the story. Listen to where the focus is here. I'm going to read it and just listen to the emphasis about how the fool ignores God and focuses on himself. So I'm sentence 16. Jesus told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop, and he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I'll store all my grain and my goods, and I'll say to myself, you have plenty of things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it'll be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich to God. See how me-centered the fool is? How he does not give a single thought to God? There's no place for God in the life of this man in this story of Jesus. He built the barns. He'll build the bigger ones. He'll say to himself. There's no reference to God in his me-centered life. And Jesus says that God says he's a fool. Isn't it the problem? So often there's no place for God in our lives. And if we're honest with ourselves, we walk out of here and we go through the week, we live like atheists hour to hour, day to day during the week. We go to work. And many of us operate on the assumption that God is as good as dead. I'm totally me-centered at that point, and Jesus says, for that I'm a fool. Third reason this man is a fool, in that in his living life for materialism, in his living life for assets, in his ignoring God, he doesn't realize that there's going to be an end point where he's going to be held accountable. And so 20, but God said to him, 20, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you, then he'll get what you prepared for yourself. A few years ago, three multimillionaires died in the eastern suburbs of Sydney in 1 week. And in this one church, there were three big funerals in the 1 week, and of the three men who died. And the Herald sent a reporter out, and they interviewed the minister who'd conducted the funerals. And it was reported in the paper, he was asked, how much did they leave? This is a long pause. Before the minister replied, all of it. when you die, when they put you in the coffin, there's not many pockets. There's no luggage racks on hearses. You can't take it with you. And at the moment of death, all their money didn't do any good whatsoever. It's not going to impress God that these men who died had full bank accounts back on earth. There's been an awful lot of talk about superannuation, planning for the future, retirement. And I remember hearing one of the superannuation industry consultants interviewed on the radio by Clive Robertson. And Clive was asking this superannuation industry expert all these questions and saying, the superannuation industry expert was saying, we need to think about the future and we need to look after our futures and the population's aging and the baby boomers are getting older and you need to be, the society, we won't be able to afford the pension for everyone and you need to think about your future and your future and make sure you prepare properly. And Robertson, who's a Christian man, said to the superannuation expert, very important point you make, the importance of thinking about the future, preparing for the future, living rightly now in the light of the future. Then Robertson asked his question. Have you thought about your future and what will happen when you die? The PR guy from the superannuation industry is thinking at this point, what's our association policy on that? And there's this long pause on the radio. And the pause goes on and on and on and on and on before the superannuation industry guy finally stammers out, no. And Robertson says, well, you should think about that. What'll happen after you die? And Clive's point was to this superannuation industry official, wouldn't it be stupid, foolish, to put all this thinking and effort and energy into my superannuation and planning for the future and building bigger barns and dreaming of doing what this man in Jesus' story is doing. And I'll say to myself, 19, you'll have plenty of good things, plenty of superannuation, laid up for many years, take life easy, eat, drink, be merry. And the man in Jesus' story and the man in Clive's interview are fools. Because they gave no thought to eternity after death. Much more foolish, I don't know where you're at on this point, but I want to say much more foolish than not having your super sorted out is not having thought about your eternal superannuation. Is being a fool and living as if you'll never die. And you'll never have to face God. And we'll never have to give an account. And when we give an account, to be judged and found wanting. 20. God said to the superannuation expert, you fool. This very night your life will be demanded of you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? There's going to come a time when our life is demanded of us. And if so, I've spent my whole life foolishly living for materialism and my whole life foolishly ignore God and foolishly thinking I'd never die, then I'm a fool and Jesus says I'll face a godless eternity. A horrible four-letter word for it. Hell. Eternity without God. I mean, it's a sharp, hard word. But better to hear the sharp, hard word from Jesus this morning that your eternal superannuation needs sorting out than to find out when it's too late to do anything about it. There's the three things on how to be a fool. Here's the three things on how to be wise. Then we'll open up for questions and comments and we're going to pray at the end. Jesus in this story commends to us the wise way to live. What is the wise way to live? It's the opposite, really. If it's foolish to be living for assets, it's foolish to be living for materialism, then it's wise to be on guard against greed. If it's foolish to be ignoring God, it's wise to be rich towards God. And if it's foolish to ignore death and judgment, then it's wise to prepare for your death and judgment. Wise way to live, 1:15. He said to them, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Watch out, says Jesus, be careful, don't be greedy. The wise way to live is to be watching against that greed that I keep seeing in me. Second wise way to live, be rich towards God. 20. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich towards God. I think Jesus is saying quite clearly that people who would follow him should be rich, generous towards God and the causes of God. And that's got to apply to our money. It's got to apply to our wallets. It's got to apply to what we put in the Perspex box as we leave the building today. But more than that, it's got to apply to our hearts. It's our hearts having God as a priority in our life. And that's a total revolution. It's stopping being me-centered and all about serving me and my money and my assets and starting to be God-centered. And if it's wise to be rich towards God, it's going to mean finding out about him, and it's going to mean how does he want me to live, and it's going to mean listening to him as he speaks to me in the scriptures. And then when he tells me to change my behavior, it's going to mean doing that. It's foolish to live as if God doesn't exist. It's wise to be rich towards God. Thirdly, it's wise to recognize that there is a reality, that there will come a day when 20 our life will be demanded of us and we'll face death and accountability before God. How will we plead before him? I mean, if all of us have lived like the Koch brothers, hey, it's not fair, it's not fair. Foolishly we've lived for money. Foolishly been me-centered, not God-centered. Foolishly lived as if I'm bulletproof and I'm never going to die. I hardly ever think about my own death. Every week, though, in the paper, there's the obituaries column. And every week, somebody dies in that first decade of life, 0 to 10. Somebody dies in the 10 to 20 decade. Somebody dies in the 20 to 30 decade. Somebody dies in the 30 to 40 decade. I don't know when it's going to be me on that page in the Herald. But I need to face that there will be a day when I face him. And God, because he's God, he can't just say, oh, Dominic, it doesn't matter. The foolish way you've lived up till now, it doesn't matter. And I mean, even if today I made the decision, I'm going to stop being a fool, I'm going to start being wise, I could never pay him back for what I've done up until now, by the way I've lived to date. And even more than that, because the sort of people I am, despite my best intentions, I'm actually going to keep doing foolish things and thinking foolish thoughts and putting my hope in a new push-button garage door opener and an air conditioner. And I look at my sisters' houses. I've got three sisters. All of them are wealthier than I am. I keep thinking, I'm seduced into thinking, it's not fair. And God understands that and understands my sin. And because he's God, as well as being totally just, he's also loving. He sends his one and only Son to die to pay for my foolishness. And that is actually the big, big thing that we need to be wise about. And that came through as we listened to Eliza and we listened to Hayden, that Jesus has taken the punishment for all my mistakes. He dies for me. I know about bosses taking the rap for employees' mistakes. But this is amazing. Jesus takes the punishment for me when I was working for the opposition. Jesus calls on me to be rich towards God, but he has modeled being rich towards me. In that moment at Calvary, outside Jerusalem, when Jesus was executed, he took on himself the full frontal, full bore anger of God. Took on himself the punishment for all the wrong that all people have ever done. It's foolish to ignore the reality of death and accountability. It's wise to see that we will die and will be held accountable. We will be found wanting. Last year, lovely little old lady who lived next door to my family when I was growing up died. And she asked me a couple of years ago if I would speak at her funeral. And last year I visited her once a week for 8 months, first at her home, then in the hospital, nursing home, hospital. And I remember several times in that period, and every time we went to see her, we opened the Bible together and we looked at the words of Jesus together. And I remember a couple of times other people were there at the hospital and they wanted to say to her, "Oh, it's all right, you're not dying." It's just rubbish. She had leukemia. She was on the way out. She knew it. She knew her death was coming. She knew her accountability was coming. And she wanted to make sure that she was right before God. It's an extraordinary privilege to be given 6 months' warning. 6 months' warning that you're going to meet God. That's an extraordinary privilege that the man in Jesus' story did not get. I don't know if we'll get that privilege, but would be foolish to assume that we are going to get that privilege. We would be wise to assume that my headspace, my mind, my attitude to God needs to be wise from today on. I printed a prayer on this handout sheet. It's the kind of prayer you'd need to pray to run back into the arms of God. Just look with me and see if this is you. Dear God, I've been a fool and I want to be wise. Is that you? Foolishly, I've been living for me and I'm sorry. Foolishly, I've been ignoring you and I'm sorry. Foolishly, I've been living as if I'd never die and I'm sorry. I acknowledge that I will die and will be judged. Thanks that Jesus died to pay for my foolishness. Please help me now to live wisely and to be rich towards you, God. Is that where you're at with God? I'm going to lead us in praying that prayer. And this is where you are at in your heart from this point on with God. Then why don't you join me in saying this to God? Would you join me in prayer? Dear God, I've been a fool and I want to be wise. Foolishly, I've been living for me and I am sorry. Foolishly, I've been ignoring you and I am sorry. Foolishly, I've been living as if I'd never die and I am sorry. I acknowledge that I will die and will be judged. Thanks that Jesus has paid for my foolishness. Please help me to live wisely and to be rich towards you, God. Amen. I take it in a room this big with this many people that there's a number of people who have decided in their heart this morning that they have previously been living as fools before God and now want to be wise with him. And that you, I mean, there'll be some people who are confirmed in a position that they already had, but there'll be some people here who changed position this morning. And if you change position and you know that, wow, this is very significant. This is very significant because I walked into this building, and when I walked into this building this morning, in God's eyes, I was a fool. And I'm going to walk out of this building this morning, and in God's eyes, I'm wise. That's a major change. I mean, that's the change. That's the prayer that we've got for Olivia and Emily. We're praying that, I mean, that there will come a day when that would be their position, when they would understand these things for themselves. But what if you've done it? What if you've made that move this morning? What if you've changed? Do you know what's happening in heaven right now? There's a party. There's a celebration. There's angels popping champagne. Isn't that a great image? A lot of people think heaven's going to be dry. That's not the case at all.